What's going on, everyone? Welcome to One Man's Opinion Podcast. I am your host, Noah Gillian. So happy you decided to join in today. It is the 18th of January, 2021, and we are here to recap another great week in sports. Got a lot to talk about today, so without further ado, let's get right into it. Alright, the first thing we're going to kind of talk about today, bombshell article from the Philadelphia Inquirer came out over the weekend, Saturday, January 16th, headlined Inside Carson Wentz's Turbulent Season and the Forces Behind His Regression. Definitely was getting a lot of talk this weekend, not only from Philadelphia media, but also national attention. A lot of stuff going on in this article, from anything from Carson Wentz to Jalen Hurts to Doug Peterson, also Press Taylor, Howie Roseman. You know, it really goes in depth. It was a well-written article. I had to check it out once I saw what was going on. I saw a lot of people talking about it, so I needed to see it for myself. I kind of got into it, and there's a lot of anonymous sources, a lot of good nuggets in here. So kind of talking about some of the key takeaways that I had for the article. First thing you kind of see, and they kind of talk about in the article, is how much Carson Wentz has in terms of pull in personnel decisions. And, it kind of frames him as if he makes every move, like he has the final say in it. And they even link another article from the Philadelphia Inquirer during this part, and it kind of totally, goes against what they're saying in this article. So it confused me a little. The previous article that they linked said, they consult Carson in terms of, offensive moves, because he either worked out with them, threw with them, or, knew them personally, so he could give them a good scout or something on it. However, it never said anything that he makes the final call, or he was even in the, in the decision-making room. A lot of it just kind of said that, he was consulted, his opinion. Zach Ertz is also mentioned in that same article, talking about how he is consulted as well. So, I felt it was kind of a weird jab in the new article that came out on Saturday, saying that a lot of people within the organization felt he had too much pull already within the organization, which, I'm not going to say if it was any other quarterback, let me just say, if it was any other quarterback, usually they have more say than usual. I'm not comparing, obviously, Carson Wentz to any of these quarterbacks, but, when you talk about someone like Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees or, these types of quarterbacks, I'm sure Mahomes gets consulted, even Josh Allen in his third year having a great year, I'm sure he was consulted before they went out and got Stephon Diggs. You have to talk to your quarterback, because at the end of the day, it's the most valuable position on the field, and you want that player, especially someone you're paying over $30 million a year to, to feel comfortable and to understand and to be involved in, those personnel moves, but not make the decisions, which is why it just confused me a little bit. However, it was something that is obviously very real. A lot of people within the organization thought that he has too much say, which, I'm not going to say anything, about, because I don't know if it's fact or fiction. However, I do think it's something that, a quarterback has earned when they, when they do certain things. Obviously, Carson hasn't done a ton in his career, but I feel like for the Philadelphia Eagles, he has done enough to garner that. This season, obviously, went off the rails. I think a lot of that stuff that's came out in this article was also before the year, so I think a lot changes now, but we'll see. As we kind of, navigate through the article and move on, one thing they also did mention was how Carson Wentz does not take to hard coaching or criticism very well. They said they would challenge him, and he, didn't respond well to it or would fight back. And it was also another kind of weird claim here, too, because in the article, it goes on to say how former Eagles quarterback coach John DeFilippo and former Eagles offensive coordinator Frank Wright both coached him very hard and got on him a lot, and he responded very well to it. Obviously, with both of them on staff, Carson had an MVP caliber year in 2017, even in 2016, had a solid rookie year. So it was another kind of thing that almost contradicted itself within the article. And it's really just something to monitor. You know, I do think Carson is a very team-first guy in that sense. So, you know, just, you know, in terms of hard coaching and everything, I feel like some people, you know, if you hold someone like that accountable, you know, but if you let them kind of do what they want, some people might be starting to feel themselves with a certain level of power that they get. So, you know, I just think it's all accountability for that point of the article. However, you know, that doesn't excuse Carson Wentz at all. They even had a quote here. An anonymous veteran player on the Eagles was quoted as saying, you know, he doesn't understand he lost games for us. He never will admit that, and that's a problem because he can't get that corrected. And that, when you hear something like that, you know, first thing I think of is, you know, who would say this? Because I feel like if they were close enough to Carson or whatever, they would say something to him. But, you know, at the end of the day, he did lose games for the Eagles this year, multiple. And, you know, I think that's just something that needs to be handled, you know, in the locker room. And when you look at it as a whole, you know, when you have these leaks like of anonymous quotes coming out and all this stuff, you know, that doesn't paint well for how the locker room is. Usually, you know, you don't see a lot of teams having just random quotes coming out bashing, you know, their franchise quarterback. And that's when you know you have, you know, a not as secure a locker room as you would need to be successful. And that's why, you know, I kind of have a negative connotation right now with the Eagles. Just, you know, there's just a lot of stuff that doesn't seem right. And, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. So it's just something to monitor, especially with that. I think Carson does need to take a lot more accountability within the team. It's just something the quarterback should do of, you know, a National Football League team. And, you know, we'll see. But one thing I do think led to a little bit of, you know, Carson's big head here is, you know, Press Taylor. He's kind of painted in this article as almost to be a doormat here for Wentz, often not correcting or actually coaching Wentz in quarterback meeting rooms. You know, if Carson would incorrectly point out a read not being there or make an excuse about why he didn't hit something, it was often a very weak excuse, and Press Taylor, you know, wouldn't correct him or wouldn't coach him up, you know, the right way. He might point it out and Carson would give him, you know, some kind of lame excuse, which, you know, is probably more on Carson. However, Press Taylor, you are the coach of, you know, the passing game coordinator. You got promoted, you know, you're pretty much in charge of the offense right now. I know Doug Peterson calls the plays and stuff, but Press Taylor is involved every single day doing that stuff. So he's, you know, someone that needs to hold Carson Wentz accountable. A lot of players in the NFL, you know, make excuses for certain things, but coaching in the NFL matters so much. You know, a lot of players come in and, you know, have problems, but you find them with the right coach and they can, you know, realize potential. And, you know, you can have a team devoid of talent, but if you have good coaching staff, then, you know, it makes the players play up. You know, the NFL more than any other sport is a coaching league. So I do think having such a young coach, almost, you know, who's been around with Carson, who definitely doesn't have the, you know, equity within the franchise as Carson Wentz, you know, is just going to be like, okay, well, I'm not going to correct him because he's the quarterback and, you know, he can pretty much do what he wants. When in reality, your coaches need to hold your players accountable, no matter if it's, you know, your best player on the roster or your 53rd best player on the roster. So it's just, I think what we're kind of seeing the theme here is it was a multitude of factors that has led to, you know, Carson Wentz's decline here and regression, which the article goes to point out. However, I do think, you know, Carson is at fault because he took advantage of these opportunities, and, you know, I'm not letting him off the hook by any means, you know what I mean? But I do think we can look at a multitude of factors. And after we just kind of discussed some of those ones, including, you know, with, you know, his involvement in personnel decisions and with hard coaching and everything, I do think that leads us to Doug Peterson and some of the faults that, you know, he has made, which obviously led to his parting with the Philadelphia Eagles. One thing that was mentioned in the article that I thought was, you know, fascinating, Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson used to meet every Thursday before games, obviously, and just discuss the game plan ahead, maybe the game from the previous week, and just discuss and be on the same page. And, you know, Peterson no longer did that. They no longer met with, or he no longer met with Carson Wentz to discuss games, practices. They would only talk, you know, they would only sit down and meet in, you know, install meetings late in the week when they install their game plan. And I think that, you know, that really, it really showed up of late, because you could really see the disconnect between the two and just the mistrust almost between the two. So, you know, I do think that was, you know, I think that is something that is very real and something that, you know, Carson might say, hey, you know, we really used to do this all the time and now we don't. So that might have caused a little bit of disconnect. You know, I always say more communication is always better, no matter if you want to hear it or not. But, you know, it, if you don't have more communication, it just leaves the door open to so much more just misconstruing information and everything. So, you know, I think that's one thing. And another thing that kind of have led to Peterson's, you know, demise within the organization is they go on in the article and say he, quote, did not inform anyone that when he was going to Sudfeld in the last game. And the article kind of specifically mentioning this and saying that this was a big reason for Doug, I do think was kind of cheap, and I didn't really understand it at all, because if anyone, you know, watched the press conferences all week, you know, heard what Doug was saying, he did say that even before the game, that Sudfeld had a very, very good chance to get playing time in the game, and that he wanted to see Sudfeld in the game. Now, do I think he may have handled it the right way? No, not necessarily. However, it just, it doesn't make sense. Even Jason Kelsey came out and said, you know, I came up to Doug, you know, we're going to Sudfeld. He said, yeah, I want to see him get some reps. He said, are you sure? Or whatever. He's like, okay. And then Kelsey's like, okay, cool. And goes and does it. You know, I think this kind of, just being on national TV, I think it garnered a lot more attention. But I don't, you know, I think that was kind of a cheap thing by the article just to say, because it was not saying it was common knowledge, but the team knew that Sudfeld was going to have a chance to play in the game. So, you know, I just thought using that as kind of a point in the article was kind of weird. And I don't know, just kind of going a little bit more with how, you know, with especially talking about Press Taylor, you know, being kind of a doormat for Carson Wentz, it did go on to mention Doug Peterson would not hold Wentz accountable for anything on the field, and maybe that's just his personality. He's, you know, anti-confrontational, but I don't know. I think there's a multitude of things that happened here that led to Doug's demise, but, you know, some things within the article specifically, you know, it was a little unfair, but I did learn a lot of, you know, good things, especially that would play reason to the Carson Wentz, Doug Peterson relationship, you know, with him no longer meeting with Wentz and, you know, not holding him accountable. I do think that that relationship started to splinter, which they did mention in an ESPN article that came out. Also, another thing that they kind of went into was the coaching staff's negligence to see Carson's camp performance. He really struggled in camp. You know, a lot of coaches believed that, you know, some of the injuries were maybe playing a part a little bit. You know, one thing they go into in the article is talking about how coaches, you know, Carson does roughly a 45-minute warm-up, they said in the article, and, you know, a lot of coaches were like, well, does he really need that long to warm up? Like, why is he taking so long? And I'm just like, at first, I was like, okay, maybe I have a point, but, like, on second thought, like, everyone's body is different, first of all, and, like, that's what you're worried about, like, that it takes, you know, that he has a long warm-up. I would be more concerned about how do we fix him on the field, and are we worried about his mechanics? Are we worried about his timing, his decision making? You know, and these coaches are like, you know, well, you know, I think he's taking too long to warm up. There's just so many coaches in our team, and I feel like a lot of people that just feel like they deserve so much more within the organization, And, you know, obviously Carson probably has gotten more of that than he probably deserves. However, when you start going into who deserves what and, you know, who's earned what, it's a slippery slope. And, you know, a lot of people get their feelings hurt when something doesn't go their way. So I just thought that was such a weird thing to complain about. And such a weird thing to go into with the article. However, I don't know. These coaches even, you know, watched film from 2017 after the struggles persisted during into the year, and to, you know, to see what Wentz was doing differently. And the one thing that the article mentioned, they even said, the coaches said they saw similar flaws. First of all, that's just beginning of the quote. And first of all, how have they not tried to address those flaws? You know, if they're so obvious, like they went back and they saw the same flaws they're seeing now, how come in the last 3 years we haven't tried to work on those? Do you know what I mean? I know he's been injured during points of each season, you know, with obviously the end of 2017 is ACL. So he comes back and then 18, you know, has, you know, the back problem. However, did play a good chunk of the season. And then all 2019, he's healthy, plays 16 games. And we, you know, I just feel like they're not, they are trying to help him. Obviously, they're coaches and stuff. But if you're seeing the same flaws you're seeing then as 2020, what does that say to the Philadelphia Eagles about your coaching staff? You know, you're supposed to elevate players year to year. You know, I was just saying, in the NFL, coaching matters more than any other sport. You know, in the NBA, it's a star-driven league. It's a players' league. Players determine, you know, with all the movement, free agency, they determine who's going to be good and blah, blah, blah. However, you know, in baseball, it's, you know, it's a bullpen game. It's a lot more pitching-oriented. The managers, they play something, but it's a lot more, you know, GM constructing teams and all that. Managers do play a part. However, it's more of the front office constructing the team and also having, you know, that good makeup. However, in the NFL, it's all coaching. You can have a great roster and bad coaching, and your team's going to stink. You can have a terrible roster and great coaching, and your team's going to overachieve and do well. And I just don't get how, if there were so obvious flaws, why have we not tried to correct them? However, that's just the beginning of the quote from the film study of 2017. They also said his decision-making was better and the overall roster was better. So what I make that out to be as Wentz doesn't trust the offense as a whole with his decision-making, and also doesn't trust some of the players that are within the offense. They kind of mentioned how injuries have, you know, a combination of Wentz struggling as well as injuries to the offense and Peterson's play calling that may have made him not trust the offense as much, you know. And also with the overall roster, I think that's a Howie Roseman thing. I mean, ever since 2017, our roster has gotten worse and worse each year. And I don't think anyone can argue that. So it's just, when these coaches, you know, are saying these certain things, it's just, it's confusing to me. I feel like there's a multitude of different factors here. However, when they say things like, you know, they saw similar flaws and, you know, his decision making was better. You know, I agree. A lot of that is on Carson Wentz. I have never disputed that, and I've said it multiple times. However, I do think that you can't just throw all the blame on him with that. And, you know, people need to start taking accountability, starting with Carson Wentz. And right behind him, behind the podium, should be Howie Roseman. And, you know, they should start taking accountability, because then when you don't, you let the media, especially in Philadelphia, run rampant, you know, with your name and with your reputation. So, you know, overall, from the article, I felt there was a lot of interesting stuff to really dissect and dive into. You know, I've had this negative connotation, which I've mentioned, with the Eagles at the end of this year and into next year. I don't see them being competitive next year. Realistically, we're probably the fourth best team in the division, because the Washington football team, right? Great defense, all young defensive ends. You know, they've spent their last four first-round picks on defensive linemen. They're going to be good. You know, I mean, they have weapons on offense, Antonio Gibson, Terry McLaurin. They're going to be good next year. They won the division this year. Now, no team has repeated in the division since 2003-2004, Philadelphia Eagles. However, I think they have a good chance. New York football Giants, Joe Judge, you know, had a great turnaround for the Giants. You know, they almost made the playoffs late in the season. However, if they didn't get off to such a poor start, they probably would have positioned themselves a lot better. However, they look good. Saquon Barkley coming back next year is only going to make their offense better. Another year of Daniel Jones. They shore up their defense a little bit, and obviously the defense was the strength of their team. However, I'm just saying that they keep that in place. Daniel Jones next year hopefully takes a step. They look better. Then you talk about the Dallas Cowboys. Dak Prescott, he is a free agent. I do think he'll be back in Dallas. However, that team is stacked. You know what I mean? They're going to address defense in this year's draft. So if their defense takes any step forward, they'll be better. And I just don't see what moves the Eagles can make right now. I mean, I think they're going to take Ja'Marr Chase in the first round. But, you know, we'll see. But overall, takeaways, you know, what I think has been transpiring with this article and just with the Eagles as a whole, just going to say a couple things right out of the gate, right? Carson Wentz played terribly this year. Terribly. And I don't think anyone could dispute that. I can't even dispute that. You know, even on my Carson Wentz emergency podcast, which I had after the Seattle Seahawks game, I think we played the Packers next week, he got benched at halftime, so he didn't play after that. So, you know, that's pretty much for his season. You know, he played terribly. So I'm just going to say that as fact number one right out of the gate. Fact number two, Doug Peterson's play calling was hard to fathom all year. It just didn't make sense. You know, he rarely rolled Wentz out of the pocket, often going multiple series without calling any kind of bootlegs. Minimal motion to start the year when every game you look at, every playoff team you're watching, someone's moving right at the snap. And the Eagles, you know, are stuck in the early 2010s with their offense. And he didn't really play to the strength of his players, often abandoning the run game. You know, if it didn't work once or twice early in the game, would just completely abandon it and have Wentz throw it a bunch of the time. So, while in 2017, we were a top five running team, and Carson Wentz excelled off the play action. And obviously, some of that might have been due to the offensive line injuries. However, I just thought once Doug Peterson went to Jalen Hurts, his play calling did improve slightly. However, we were right back to it. Miles Sanders wasn't involved in the last couple games. You know, had a good game against the Saints, and that was 425, pretty much a national TV game. So everyone saw it. Everyone loves Jalen Hurts. Everyone loves Miles Sanders. Oh, great, Miles Sanders is back. But, you know, Doug Peterson reverted right back to it once we started losing games. We lost our next three games, and we reverted right back into, you know, mediocrity. Less than that, even. So that's fact number two, Doug Peterson and his play calling were definitely at fault. Fact number three, and my final fact, Howie Roseman built an old, expensive roster that has been getting hurt for 3 years in a row now. 3 years in a row. Reminds me of an old quote by Ian Fleming. Once is happenstance. Twice is coincidence. Third time is a pattern. And when you look at something like that, I mean, it just rings so true. 3 years in a row, we've been one of the most injured teams in the league, and we've been one of the most slow teams in the league with the lack of explosive plays. What? At some point, like, you have, and with the draft, I went in the Carson Wentz Emergency podcast, I talked about our drafting over the last decade or so. I just don't get how Jeffrey Lurie, owner of the Philadelphia Eagles, just won a Super Bowl 3 seasons ago, can look at this roster and think that it's built well. 2017, plethora of injuries. We get hot. We have the right players stay healthy. We win the Super Bowl. 2018, rash of injuries. 2019, rash of injuries. This is actually the fourth time it's happened. 2020, rash of injuries. Howie Roseman is definitely at fault here, and that's my third fact, but that finishes the trifecta. Carson Wentz, Doug Peterson, Howie Roseman. I think you can pin the Eagles' failures this year on those three specifically. And, you know, everything else was just a domino effect from those three. But as we kind of move through that and we try to fix these problems, right? So one of those, Doug Peterson, already been removed from the coaching. So, you know, they've had we've had some people hired to potentially replace him. One person we were interviewing, Brandon Staley, is going to take the Los Angeles Chargers job, so he will not be in the running anymore. That still leaves the Eagles with Brian Daboll, potentially, once the Bills get done, the Bills offensive coordinator, who I would like a lot. I think you got to give Deuce a chance, Deuce Daly, who is the assistant head coach and the Eagles run game coordinator. I would be interested in Joe Brady, Panthers offensive coordinator. I would rather have him as an OC, only because he was an offensive coordinator last year. It's his first year in the NFL. I'd rather pick him up, but if we didn't offer him the head coach job, I don't think he would leave Carolina. Todd Bowles, interesting. You know, the defense coordinator for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I would be interested in that if we got someone like Kellen Moore, the Cowboys offensive coordinator, as our offensive coordinator. You know, I think we need to get some kind of offensive-minded either head coach or an up-and-coming offensive coordinator to join our staff. I really think a change in the voice might help Carson, and hopefully Howie Roseman fixes the roster. But we need huge roster turnover. I would give Roseman another year or two max in order to right the ship and set this franchise up for success. However, if we don't improve by that point, he has got to go. And there's nothing else to really say. But overall, those are my takeaways from the article. I do think it was an interesting article. You know, the Eagles can't stay out of the news. And, you know, I just can't wait until the draft and we get our new head coach on payroll. All right, as we kind of move away from mediocrity into the good teams of the NFL, the divisional round wrapped up this weekend, and we have our championship matchups set for each conference. Buffalo took down Baltimore 17-3. Kansas City took down Cleveland 22-17. And in the NFC, Tampa Bay took down New Orleans 30-20. And Green Bay took down the Los Angeles Rams 32-18. Starting off with the Kansas City-Cleveland game, a couple key storylines from this game. Patrick Mahomes' concussion in the third quarter of the game. Also, Tyreek Hill, we're going to go talk about him a little bit. Just love Tyreek Hill's game. Think he needs a little bit more attention. And often, also Cleveland looked really solid in this game. However, starting off, Patrick Mahomes' concussion, he has a decent chance to play next week. You know, he tweeted someone after the game, so you know he was able to at least go on some electronics, which is good. You know, they didn't black him out and not have him look at any screens or anything, so it does sound like he is doing pretty good. That's what Andy Reid said after the game. However, you know, we'll see. It has to be a perfect week for him to play, and he's going to absolutely change the whole dynamic of the rest of the playoffs, because if he doesn't play, I love the Bills, and even if he does play, he might not be 100%, so we'll see. As we move on, though, Tyreek Hill, I absolutely love him. He's got to be in the best receiver in the league conversation. You know, I was texting with some of my friends yesterday. You know, I don't think he's necessarily number one, you know, because I think I would prefer a couple other receivers, maybe Davante Adams, DeAndre Hopkins, probably still Julio Jones. However, he definitely deserves to be in the discussion. He has transformed himself into a legit number one receiver from just a gadget guy. So I think he needs more respect, and I wanted to give him my vote of confidence. I do love Tyreek Hill a lot. Also, Cleveland looked really solid in the game. They ended up losing their starting left tackle as well as their backup left tackle during the game, which is tough to bounce back from. They did look good offensively. I thought Baker played well. Kareem Hunt in his homecoming looked good, as well as Nick Chubb. Both of them looked really good. However, you know, a couple turnovers, you know, shifted the whole momentum of the game. You know, the fumble through the back of the end zone pretty much was the deciding factor in the game. And, you know, if they score right there, it's 16-10 going into halftime, more than likely, depending on how much time KC had left. But instead of that, they fumble through the back of the end zone. KC comes down, hits a field goal, and it's 19-3. So it's just, you know, it's tough for Cleveland, because I think they really were in this game and had a really, really good chance to win. Even, you know, it took some heroics from Chad Henne at the end to secure the win. However, Cleveland will be back. They'll be back next year, and I'm excited to see how they look then. The other AFC game here to talk about, Buffalo and Baltimore. Weird defensive game here. That was my key takeaway from this. Three total missed field goals in the game. It was sloppy. However, the wind was swirling, altering everything from punts to throws to kicks. You know, a lot of the punters, a couple shankopotamuses, only went 15 or 20 yards. A couple big throws people missed. Josh Allen deep down the sideline to Stephon Diggs. Wynn took that one a little bit. Even the backup quarterback for Baltimore, Huntley, came in and had a deep pass to Marquise Brown, which would have been huge for Baltimore, and the Wynn just took it. It missed. However, Huntley was in the game because Lamar Jackson also suffered a concussion, another superstar going down with a concussion. Looked all right during the game, was making some things happen. However, like I said, you know, they had 3 points total during the game. However, they had two missed field goals, and, you know, the play of the game really was the pick six down by the goal line. You know, the Ravens were driving. It was 10-3. They were first and goal, or excuse me, it was goal to go, and or maybe right outside the goal to go. And Lamar Jackson throws a pick six, and they go 100 yards the other way. So you look at it, two missed field goals, and let's say Baltimore scores that touchdown. This is all like, not like, oh, well, you know, if they got the ball back and they drove 80 yards, you know, they would have been in it. This was one play away three different times from having another 13 points, right? And they lost 17-3. So, obviously, would still have been down 1 point, but they could have went for two on the touchdown. I digress. It would have been 10-10 if they scored that touchdown. So, you know, it was tough. But at the end of the day, Josh Allen did enough to win. Stephon Diggs is an absolute stud. Definitely is earning his All-Pro first-team nomination and award. Is definitely earning that award. And they're one of the best combos in the league. I can't wait to see Buffalo take on Kansas City next week. I've been riding Buffalo all playoffs, and I do think that, you know, they've shown they can win multiple different ways. Weird defensive games or high-scoring shootouts. So it was great to see that game, and I can't wait to see Kansas City and Buffalo next week. All right, the last game on Sunday, Tampa Bay, New Orleans. The defense really shined for Tampa Bay. Looked absolutely outstanding. Three picks and a forced fumble was shocking, honestly. You know, at one point, they went to the sideline of Tampa Bay, the Fox crew, and they were saying, you know, you can see how frustrated they are, you know, doing everything. And, you know, New Orleans had a good lead. New Orleans had a good lead, and Tampa had no answers offensively. And all it took was, you know, Drew Brees to a couple, you know, bad decisions. One, Alvin Kamara, it looked like a miscommunication, was running up the seam and wanted the ball a little bit more downfield, and Drew threw it early. Devin White pick, took it down. Late in the game, they threw one to Jared Cook, hit his shoulder, bounced way up in the air, pick. That pretty much sealed the game. And then before that, the forced fumble of Jared Cook allowed Tampa Bay to go and score on the three turnovers before the last pick of the game, which led to a kneel down. They scored three touchdowns. They didn't score a touchdown just, you know, off a kickoff or off a deep punt. You know, they had a turnover and, you know, give them credit, scored off their turnovers. Brady did just enough. Tom Brady did just enough to win 199 yards and two touchdowns. Also had a rushing touchdown. And, you know, no turnovers, which was the big thing. This was literally the difference in the game. Four turnovers for New Orleans and none for Tampa Bay. And, you know, it was a rough Breeze outing. It was his last game, which he confirmed before the game. So, you know, I think just a quick aside here, Drew Brees, outstanding career, first ballot Hall of Famer, you know, Super Bowl champion, leads the league in passing yards, or leads the NFL history books in passing yards and completions. You know, really revolutionized the quarterback position, being so short and, you know, not being the most mobile quarterback, but just being so cerebral and being so, you know, detail oriented, you know, really earned, you know, and deserves his flowers while he's still here. And, you know, obviously they had some rough playoff exits over the last couple years, but, you know, at the end of the day, he's one of the all-time greats and absolutely deserves flowers while he's here. And, you know, had a rough game today, but as someone on Twitter pointed out, I can't remember exactly the former NFL player. However, it did say, you know, this performance, you can't paint Drew Brees on this performance. You know, Father Time's undefeated, and you rarely go out on your own terms. So it was a tough one for Brees, but, you know, Tampa was the better team, and they showed it. And the last matchup that we are going to talk about today was the Green Bay Packers against the Los Angeles Rams. Aaron Rodgers, just a menace out there, just patrolling the field, 296 yards, two touchdowns, also had a rushing touchdown, and controlled the game, absolutely controlled the game. You know, the Rams were hanging around, but it never felt like they were close enough to make, you know, a dent into the Packers lead, excuse me. And Rodgers really showed, he just exposed the Rams defense, absolutely picked them apart. Two things that I think, you know, doomed the Rams defense: Aaron Donald, probably the best one of the best players in the NFL, top two or three, was in and out of the game the whole time. Over the last four games, he played over 95% of the snaps, and during this game was under 75% of the snaps, so definitely was impacting him, his rib injury, to a degree. Also, they had two dropped interceptions, which totally changed the game. You know, I know it was late in the first half, however, when you have a chance to intercept Aaron Rodgers, you have to take those. You know, it's not coming very often. You know, it's not coming often at all. So he really needed to take advantage of those opportunities, and they just flat out didn't. And, you know, when your defense isn't playing well, give up 32 points, you know, your offense needs to supplement that with, you know, points of their own. And Goff couldn't manage much with his thumb injury. Played well, however, no Cooper Kupp in the offense was definitely missed from Jared Goff, probably his favorite receiver, favorite target, great run blocker. Just does a lot of the little things. Captain on the Los Angeles Rams team, you know, missed him dearly. And it was tough for Cooper, a big Cooper Kupp fan. And, you know, the Packers defense at the end of the day just stepped up and absolutely shut down the Rams, held them to 18 points. You know, Jair Alexander straight up shut down a half of the field. And, you know, like I said, they couldn't get anything going. Cam Akers had a good game. Van Jefferson caught a touchdown, the rookie. So, you know, the Rams will be back, definitely. You know, Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey are still going to be on that team. So they're going to have a great defense. You know, it just really comes down to Jared Goff. So we're going to see what he does, and we are going to see how the Rams approach the offseason. However, this does set up two outstanding games. You know, you look at the quarterbacks left: Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen. You know, before the season, one of them, Josh Allen, people might not have thought, but, you know, just how fitting. Arguably the three best quarterbacks in the game right now, you know, outside of Russell Wilson, and then Josh Allen. You know, four of the probably five best quarterbacks in the league are still standing. So that sets up Tampa Bay at Green Bay. Green Bay is favored in that game, home, 3 p.m. on Sunday, and then the game after that, Buffalo at Kansas City at 6 p.m., so early games, and I think it'll follow the same schedule as yesterday, Sunday, in terms of the start times, about 3:05 and then maybe 6:40. So, you know, I just absolutely can't wait, and I think it's going to be a great championship Sunday. All right, on to our last topic of the day, where we finish every week, talking about our best bets and our wagers this weekend. Not going to lie, another rough week for best bets. You know, I feel bad for people tailing us. However, I do not feel bad for myself, because in gambling, you need to have a short memory, and that's exactly what we do. However, we are reviewing the previous week. You know, I took Kona's underdog this week as my best bet. The two-team six-point teaser of the Rams and the Bucks. The Bucks ended up winning outright, so they hit. However, the Rams could not cover 13.5 points. I believe they ended up losing by 14, so that hurt. However, we were on the right track. We misread the Rams game completely, as evident from Nick Jack's lock as well. The Rams plus 6.5. He just took them outright on the spread. And, you know, both of us missed that game. I thought the defense was going to be more of a factor, but Aaron Rodgers just absolutely sliced them up. So, you know, we misread that game completely, but we will have a better week next week with our best bets and championship Sundays. I already like both of the games and the lines which they're at, which we'll talk about in a little bit. However, the one thing I have been hot on, which is obviously I've been a little cold on my best bets, but one thing I have been hot on is backing the Bills and the Packers since the playoffs started. I began sprinkling some small wagers on each of the Bills and the Packers for each week that's passed. And this was meant to get teams I liked at longer odds. However, with smaller wagers that will accumulate nicely by the time the conference championships come around, which they are now, and the two teams' odds to win the championship are shorter than they are, so much closer to winning. I actually checked the odds today. Both of them have shrunk considerably. They are now both a little over 2-1, whereas I got the Packers and the Bills earlier at 6-1 for the Bills and around 4-1 for the Packers. So, you know, something that I liked. I do also feel as strongly as I do for these teams now as I did when the playoffs started. Buffalo may, depending on if Patrick Mahomes is ruled out or not, may even be favored in the AFC Championship game. I do not think he will sit out. However, it is a possibility. Green Bay also is favored over Tampa Bay. However, I feel more nervous about this pick because of the matchup nightmares the Buccaneers possess. However, I do feel strongly still about both of these teams. You know, I feel like these two teams were really hot coming into the playoffs and have shown up. I would think I will also slightly sprinkle some more on these teams before the conference championships. And also, if all goes well, the Bills and the Packers are playing in the Super Bowl this year, which allows me to be able to hedge some of these wagers that I've been sprinkling with the guaranteed winnings of one of those teams hoisting the Lombardi Trophy. However, enough about me and more about Kona. That's why everyone, you know, listens to this betting corner. You know, she had a rough one. She was the creator of the best bet, like I said, the underdog teaser. However, the Rams got embarrassed, and we just missed. So it brings our Kona's overall record to 9-7, still above 500. Not great, but 9 out of 16 is not a bad percentage. So let's talk about the early lines for next weekend. Tampa Bay is currently +4 at Green Bay, and Buffalo is currently +3.5 at KC. Give me Buffalo all day, +3.5. You know, Kansas City has not covered a game in a while. They haven't blown anyone out in a while. And that's been playing a lot worse competition than the Buffalo Bills. So give me Buffalo +3.5. Kona loves that one. I don't think I can take Tampa Bay +4 either. I think I would have to lean Green Bay -4. You know, I was, you know, getting too cute last week thinking the Rams were getting too many points against the Packers, but they're just hitting their stride right now. And while Tampa Bay's defense is great and they are playing great, you know, I just have a feeling the Packers are going to do well. So I think me and Kona are going to agree to stay away from that game. We do like the Packers. However, the +4 is tantalizing for the Buccaneers. However, if we had to choose one, I do like Buffalo +3.5. If I had to play Green Bay and Tampa Bay, I'd probably take the 4 just because I think they match up well with Green Bay. But like I said, we're probably going to stay away from that one. And like I said, we like Buffalo +3.5 at Kansas City, and it's going to be an absolutely amazing game. All right, everyone, that will wrap it up. Just to put a bow on the show, please hit that subscribe button if you enjoyed what we talked about today. If you want to follow us on social media, check the description below for my personal account as well as the show's Twitter account. I hope you all enjoyed, and I can't wait to see you back here again next time. I am your host, Noah Gillian, but hey, this is just one man's opinion.